It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along with The Journey with Daniel today, and he wants to deal with a subject we deal with a lot on this show, and we deal with a lot in society, anxiety and depression. Those things are so commonplace now, but you want to bring up an interesting dynamic here about what really helps that.
Yeah, and just talking to some of the people that I work with, some of the clients that I have, and one of the things that has I've just kind of been focusing on the last couple of weeks, just it's interesting, and it kind of brought me back to in my parenting days, our daughter growing up and just some of the struggles that she had in going through a period of her life where she had a lot of anxiety and depression. And I began to see in her life, and, you know, it's interesting that we see it in other people before sometimes we see it in ourselves, and see in my own life how that there's a kind of a chicken and the egg relationship between the emotions, our emotional ups and downs, and the lack of order or the degree of order that we have in our lives. And talking to clients who a lot of times are overwhelmed with circumstances in life, and then getting in and digging in and exploring kind of the roots of these things, and we find that there are a lot of areas where their life is out of control. And so we were saying before that anxiety and depression and all of their relatives, you know, discouragement, boredom, anger, are pretty commonplace in our society today, and a lot of medical professionals are going to want to treat these as disorders or diseases, and we hear that those kind of
buzz
terms.
And treat them chemically.
And treat them chemically by kind of rearranging the neurology. And certainly you can do that. There are lots of ways to be medicated, switching up the neurology and to help me feel better. And, you know, some people do that without the doctor's help. It could be alcohol or something else. I think last week we did a show on even self-harm behaviors can be a self-medication because they release endorphins. So, but it's natural to have emotional reactions to life circumstances, and so obviously we don't. If our body's functioning the way it should, and the real rascal is not some biological or physiological root problem, but it's actually at least in part, in large part, just that we're losing control. Then we have a right to be up anxious, and so we want to try to treat the real root problem.
So you're saying then right behavior as opposed to right thinking. We're so thinking oriented, particularly I think in the Christian church, right doctrine, right transforming the mind. But so often it's doing the right thing.
Even and sometimes I think
actions actually change the mind more than the mind changes the actions.
Yeah, I think sometimes we can even have right information and not act on it, and not acting on the right information can produce another level of anxiety. Case in point, the interest rates have been real low here for a couple of years, and I know there's a lot of people out there that have kind of been pondering, you know, should we refinance this loan? And now they're going up again, and having not moved on it is now, for some people, maybe generating some anxiety. So having the information and having the concepts is in and of itself not going to do the trick. You know, there's that scripture verse, doers of the word, not hearers only. Yeah, it's healthy to act.
Well, why, if people start acting correctly, start, for instance, doing the dishes or cleaning the house, or now with the exception maybe of the obsessive compulsive disorder, which is maybe a whole other thing, where people could be very orderly and very, but it's like out of control.
Actually, it's not because the obsessive compulsive is actually doing. By taking action, you know, there's the obsession, and then the compulsive behavior is a response to the obsession. And by following through on the obsessive behavior, that person is also releasing endorphins. And so that's why that becomes a habitual behavior, because it's actually helping the person to feel like
But that's but what we call that a disorder, though. If it gets out of control,
it's a different it's a disorder. But it does demonstrate the fact that taking action is actually causes relief.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, in a case like that, obsessive compulsive, what we want to do is disarm that whole dynamic of the obsessive thinking and disarm that.
Well, why does changing behavior then feel good?
Well, it feels good for that reason. It releases endorphins, and it actually does change things because when we say it has something to do with releasing endorphins, taking that action, but also just introduce something here, epigenetics. So
what is that?
Well, so it's kind of like a new field of research. It's kind of relatively new field of research. And what they've for a long time they believed that the genes were significant, and they were sort of floating around in a kind of pool of an insignificant solution. But what they're seeing now is that this solution that the genes are floating around, they're calling it epigenetics, epigenes. And these, the epigenes are actually, have an influence on the function of the gene. So the gene maybe could turn right or turn left, you know, say for example. And so the epigenes have a function, have an influence on that. And they've also found that one of the strong things that influences our epigenes is our behavior. So it's actually in a way, it's almost the other way around, that my behavior can actually almost be a self-fulfilling prophecy that I can learn to want this behavior. And so it's kind of a combination maybe of the release of endorphins and epigenetics. I want to look at boundaries because we're going to be talking about how boundaries can actually heal emotions by setting boundaries in that. So we'll have some examples a little later on. But I want to talk about boundaries. We've done this before. I'm going to just kind of a review for a lot of people. But, you know, we tend to think of boundaries as walls. My space, your space, my parking spot, your parking spot. But I also want to think of boundaries more generally as the rules that we live by. And so boundaries actually become permission and freedom. And so to give an example, had been on this wiring project for my daughter for a past year, rewiring their 100-plus-year-old house, getting out all the knob and tube wiring and putting in Romex wiring. If you're a journeyman
wiring.
Out there, okay. You know what I'm talking about. Okay, so getting that out. Now, so they may say, you know, G-Pop, we'd like a bedroom fan. Well, you can't just screw the fan up to the ceiling and turn it on. You've got to actually have a conduit, some wire go from one to the other. Well, let's think of boundaries as the wire that I'm going to install. So I've said that it's rules that we live by, but those rules also give us permission to do things in life that we wouldn't be able to do if we didn't have that rule. So I want to think of boundaries as not only walls, but also conduits. So rules that we live by give us permission to take action, and that permission to take, and the action then creates or releases the endorphins, and it makes a life change. And this is the proper way to try to manage and to get a hold of our emotional ups and downs. It may be the slow road. You can certainly take a pill and immediately affect your neurological balance, but you're not solving any problems if you're not challenging things like beliefs and emotions and changing behaviors. So we want to talk a little bit about this second half. We want to talk a little bit about the relationship between the rules that we live by and the feelings that we actually wind up having about life, kind of a chicken. The
chicken and egg relationship of disorder and depression. This gets back to our therapeutic society and thinking everything's a sickness, but can you talk a little bit about the genetics of certain behaviors that seemed like to run in families? We've talked about that before. For instance, the obvious example is the whole thing of alcoholism seems to run in families. Some people are predisposed to alcoholism. Do you think that's true, or what do you think's going on there really with genetics and its cause on certain kinds of negative behavior or good behavior, but it's usually negative behavior that we want to get rid of in our life that seems to have a we say it has a genetic component. Is there such a thing?
Yeah, those are deep waters, and I think that people just need to realize that when what we generally read off of the newspaper headlines when they say something like a genetic connection has been proven, that is a dangerous oversimplification. A gene doesn't do anything. It takes many, many genes to have a function, and those genes are influenced by other things. We've talked about epigenetics earlier. And the predisposition of genes, it's easy to talk about a genetic predisposition toward green eyes or
a physical
red
trait,
hair,
right?
A physical trait like that. But when you're talking about
behavioral traits.
Yeah, that's a little more difficult because now it gets very, very blurry. Say, for example, the womb environment, the in utero environment may have a heightened amount of androgen. And so if mom is pregnant with a little girl and there's a heightened amount of androgen, the girl might come out a little bit like a tomboy. But that doesn't dictate any kind of behavior. However, the way that the mom and dad respond to the tomboy, so the gal comes out and she's her appearance might be more tomboyish, and so the dad might respond in certain ways to her. The mother might respond in certain ways. It might have to do less with that and more with just where they are in life, and that, you know, that they grow the girl up quick and give her chores to do and that kind of thing. And so she starts to respond to that, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm. Now, was it genetic? Any genetic influence on that would be so minimal. The vast majority of influence would be modeling and the way that the parents treat the child and respond to the child and that kind of thing. So when you talk about genetic predisposition to something, it's just been oversimplified, and people are just going the wrong direction just by simply being able to say there's a genetic predisposition to depression or anxiety. We'll take ADD, for example. Mm. They would say, well, my mother and father had it, and my grandparents had it, but how on earth are you going to separate out the modeling from that? Personally, I have never, ever worked with a DNA or an ADHD child who had calm, collected, problem-solving parents.
Mm.
There's always, you could easily, in every case I've ever seen, you could easily say this is an anxiety disorder. It's a response to anxiety in the home.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not heightened anxiety. And, you know, it could be a combination of just how the child experiences it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, just the point being that when you start talking about genetic predisposition, you're playing a joker card.
So you definitely, you come down more on the side of nurture as opposed to nature. We're using the term chicken and egg, but also nature versus nurture.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You think nature has very little to do with things, but nurture has a lot more to do with it.
Yeah, nurture has, when it comes to behaviors, nurture has almost all to do with it. And even if there is a genetic component, it would be so small that, it would be. Yeah.
Well, a very interesting discussion today. Daniel Pryor, Sound Mind Broadcast. Daniel is a life coach and counselor, and he can help you. You do a lot within your life coaching aspect of what you do, a lot more with goal setting, real world action oriented things to improve people's sound, give them a sound mind, get rid of the anxiety and depression. A lot of times it has to do with the meaningful action, meaningful things that you're doing in your life. People need some help in this area, or they know someone who does. How do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Well, they can call me at 425-778-6169. And I can also be reached through email through the BibleBasedCounselor.com. And I've got some other, probably what I want to do here is let people know maybe in another week I'm going to continue this this topic, because we've got a ways to go here. I want to talk about just how to organize and basically tie that more substantially to emotions, because it's very important.
Interesting discussion today on the Sound Mind Broadcast with Daniel Pryor. We will come back second half here, Daniel, and what are we going to look at?
We're going to look at just in a little more depth about some specific examples of how we can set boundaries and rules that are actually going to help kind of de-escalate anxiety, depression, those kinds.
More on the Sound Mind Broadcast with Daniel Pryor here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach.
You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along on the journey as well today with Daniel. An interesting subject, as always, on the Sound Mind broadcast, the connection between nature and nurture and how it affects our mood, anxiety, depression. So many people struggle with anxiety and depression in our culture today, but you're really making the point that it's not so much about certainly chemical issues, and that can be a part of it, but it's about changing your behavior, changing your nurture, looking at the way you were nurtured. And how you can
change.
Well,
you know, it can certainly become, it certainly becomes a neurological thing. And we've talked about that before that even, you know, feeling good, feeling positive is a neurological, a reality. And what we're really here talking about today is, you know, I've seen a lot of people who come in with, you know, anxiety, depression, and that's just a way of being overwhelmed by circumstances and feelings about your circumstances and the way you look at them. And what we're talking about here is that organization, just the simple act of organization, is a powerful way of dealing with anxiety, depression, because anxiety, depression fundamentally is about loss of a sense of loss of personal value, control, and power. Those are related, interrelated, but I think people could relate immediately or could understand immediately when I say that being overwhelmed is a loss of control. And people say, absolutely, a loss of control. Well, gaining control can turn that around, a sense of having control. But I think a lot of times people underestimate the value of just getting something organized. Say, for example, changing a lifestyle to where from now on the dishes are going to be done after the meals.
Yeah, you've got some real world list of examples here. Why don't you go through some of this?
Yeah, you know, living in squalor, disarray, total disarray. I know some people, have known some people. I'm sure we all have known some people, and maybe there have been periods in our life when we were those people where just things didn't get done. The garage didn't get cleaned. The floor didn't get vacuumed. The dishes didn't get done. The clothes didn't get folded. I had a couple that I was working with couple years ago where the laundry would get washed but then it would lay on the couch in a pile for, you know, weeks,
or in the washing machine and get musty and have to be washed again.
What happens when your life is in that kind of disarray? Well, you cannot possibly think of have a positive sense of control and power when you're surrounded by evidence that you're out of control and powerless. And it's just kind of a downward spiral. And so little things like cleaning the bedroom, washing the car, mowing the lawn, doing the dishes, arranging the house, vacuuming the floor, just things like that are ways of, you know, they're ways of organizing and putting things in their place. Now, that's where we've talked about the beginning, the relationship between boundaries and emotions. When we're talking about living in total disarray, there's a saying, a place for everything and everything all over the place. And that's kind of what some of these places look like. And so you can imagine if you were to go in and take the books and put them where the books belong, take the CDs and put them where the CDs belong, fold the clothes up and put them in the right drawers, do the dishes, do the floor. What you're doing is you're setting boundaries. You're saying this goes here. This other thing goes over here. That's where it belongs. So, and
I bet your home is immaculate.
It comes and goes, but it's
but all, it's just practical.
Well, even something like making the bed.
Sure.
Making the bed is not something that I love to do. But when I get up in the morning, and either I or my wife is left first, and whoever is still there has to make the bed. And sometimes it's, boy, do I have time to do this? But it only takes a few seconds to do it. And the difference is, it's part of the organizing the day.
Sure.
And it's hard to be surrounded by disorganization.
Is this why women sometimes who get too busy, or maybe they're working outside of the home, they can't clean the home, they get a maid. And the maid comes in and cleans the house.
And,
just they just feel great. And, you know, case in point, our family. My wife, she loves it when we have a housekeeper who comes once every couple of weeks, cleans up, and it just makes her day.
And of course, it can't take the place of my actually doing something and taking action. Although,
so you have to buy into it yourself too.
Well, you have to do something. Now, I've got a fence that needs to be built, and I'm not going to build it myself. I'm going to hire somebody to do it. And in a way, yes, as you say, that's going to be a load off my mind. And I did take action and get it done. And then there's other things where I actually will feel more reward if I take care of the business and. So we see things like that. Now, young people in going through adolescence and early teens, their lives in like sudden turmoil or forced change, pregnancy, job change, death, divorce, all of these things can initiate frustration, anxiety, and those kinds of things. And it's easy to get off course and get disorganized. And then depression and anxiety about the disorganization can lead to a breakdown of order, but then that can also be multiplied by the disorder. So that anxiety and depression can lead a person to have a breakdown and disorder. Mm. Postpartum depression, anxiety, you know, just being overwhelmed sometimes with
a new child,
mm-hmm. and the hormonal aspect of it. And so that can bring on a lack of initiative in the home. But then the disarray can be a secondary compound that. Mm-hmm. So we look at things like time management. Also, time is a place where boundaries have to be set. And I was thinking about some of the guys and gals who are in their 30s and 40s and they're still gaming. Somebody was telling me the other day about somebody who
all night playing
has
games.
Discovered the world of drone. And this is what the person does,
gets home at 4 in the afternoon and still going on
and
it at midnight.
Playing with a drone. Now, you say, well, what's wrong with that? Well, the lack of time management can lead to depression and anxiety.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Money management, and all this again circles back to what we need to feel healthy of mind is a sense of value, control, and power. And one really good and available way to get that is by setting our visible world in order, in our spiritual world as well. I had kind of some tithing, maybe even as a way to, maybe some people are pretty good with their money other than the fact that they just don't tithe. And that should be the starting point of maybe that's an aspect of disarray or disorder.
Sure.
I think that's a huge mismanagement.
That's a source of a lot of depression and anxiety is money worries in families. And getting that under control and getting out of debt, that's a huge makes you feel better to get those things under control. Well, reiterate your theory here about value, control, and power. Remind us what this is.
Right. So your world is either getting larger or smaller. You're either retreating from relationships and responsibilities into a smaller world, actually going toward depression, toward anxiety, toward anger, and in many, many cases, toward addiction when your world is getting smaller. And the only way that you can enlarge your world is pursuing relationship and being industrious. And so, as we've talked before about these boundaries as channels and permission to actually get things done. So you can imagine if I'm in a place my time is mismanaged, my money's mismanaged, I'm living in a chaotic home. Things aren't where they're supposed to be, and it's just in disarray, this is the picture of a world that's very small. And I've given the illustration, I think, in some of the shows before of a family that I worked with many, many years ago where the boy had stopped going to school, and then he was home. And so I went to see them in the home. I was working in the public sector. The yard was about 18 inches high, and there was garbage cans turned over, and went into the house, and it was just absolutely filthy. And here was the family. Their world had gotten so small that the only part of their world that I saw was they're sitting in front of the TV eating pizza. Mm-hmm. The process of growing that world would start with actually cleaning the house. Mm. That would be the beginning of his road back to school, as a matter of fact, cleaning the house and realizing that that's now part of my world, then moving out into the yard. So anyway, guess what the point we're trying to get across here is that the fact that don't lose sight of the significance of just ordering the things around you as a way of turning around anxiety and depression. Again, we've talked in the earlier part of the show about the release of endorphins and how that those immediately make us feel better. So rather than look at the depression and anxiety as a cause of my disorder, as often as not, it's just switched around the other way, that the disorder has become the cause of my anxiety and depression.
Yeah. Managing expectations, that's a big part of it too. Interesting discussion this week, nature versus nurture when it comes to anxiety and depression. A lot of times the answer is getting more organized and living by some rules in your life. Daniel can help you determine some of those. This is probably a lot of what you do with your life coaching as well. Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor. If people need some help, Daniel, how do they get in touch with you?
I can be contacted through office phone, 425-778-6169. And people also often email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Also, previous broadcasts at your website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. Another great show, Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.